This episode is brought to you today by 3ATIV VFX Studio. Take your dumb devices and make them smart for Home Assistant with ESP Home. 3ATIV will show you how to hack and upgrade everyday devices into smart ones with easy-to-follow, step-by-step tutorials with the full code included. Head over to YouTube and check out 3ATIV. That's 3ATIVE. 3ATIV. Hello and welcome to episode 16 of the Smart Home Collective. Today, delighted to be joined by Chris from Mostly Chris and Ryan from This Smart House. Gents, how are we doing?
Good.
Doing pretty good.
Good. Absolute pleasure to have you both. Chris, we've kind of been chatting for a while. We're kind of in this little smart home bubble of content creators, and we've chatted for a wee while now, but I actually never had time to sit down and chat with one another. So I appreciate you coming on, and I'll hold my hand up for that. I was probably should have reached out sooner, but it's a pleasure to have you on. And Ryan, good to see you.
Good to see you.
I'm lucky enough to have followed both of you for a while now. I've seen your channels for a number of years. Chris, I'll come to you first. You're very much, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Ryan, but Chris, you're very much Home Assistant 100% done. Ryan, you tinker on both sides of the fence of Home Assistant, non-Home Assistant stuff.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different. But Chris, I've always kind of used you as a bit of a tutorial guy. If there's something I need to know, I'll check Chris's channel first. And if not, I'll check Peter Tinker and take a few of the others. So you're up there in my list of, right, if I need a how-to for Home Assistant, it's normally you. So do you want to give us an overview of your channel to start with, in case those any listeners of yours haven't heard or seen you?
Yeah, and you're right. It's pretty much just, it's a lot of how-to in the Home Assistant world. I mean, there's so much stuff that's going on there that, you know, you could spend all your time doing this kind of work. I have things sitting over here on the table that one day I'm going to get to that I want to showcase. I have different integrations and things I want to play with. The hard part about doing something with a channel like that is making it relatable and taking it from, you know, I can do it in 5 minutes to turning it into a tutorial and, you know, all of that kind of thing. So yeah, it's mostly Home Assistant. You can see, well, at one point, I think I changed it, but I did start this channel back before the big thing that happened in the world. Can't say the word right, but I was going to do aviation stuff and IoT. You can probably see one of my very first videos there. I don't know how far back it goes, but maybe I took it out. Look at that. Yeah, that very first video, was it 161 views 4 years ago? Yep. I tried to land a plane and stream it at the same time, and it was awful. It was terrible. So after that, I jumped into a few things. You can see Plex. That's kind of a weird thing. It's not Home Assistant. And then from there, just kind of threw a few things in. But after that, it was Home Assistant for the most part.
I was going to ask a question, but that's an obvious answer then. So the starter for you wasn't Home Assistant. You moved into Home Assistant and then the channel evolved into more Home Assistant focused. Was that natural or was that something you made an intention to do?
I think it was a natural progression. I to be honest, I watch my kids watch these channels and I said, you know, these people are like going crazy on YouTube and they're doing things and I can't do that. And then one day I woke up and said, well, yes, I can. I'm going to do it anyway. And I didn't expect anything of it at all. And so people started watching. You're like, really? And then I would get comments, you know, your content. I looked over the internet and I couldn't get it. And I went to your channel. I figured it out. I mean, I don't know how I do it. I don't do anything special. I just talk through things, sometimes too much. But spook video.
I have the same problem.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a natural progression in Home Assistant and I found that niche and I just stuck with it ever since then. I mean, you'll see some random stuff here and there that's not necessarily Home Assistant, but for the most part, it's all Home Assistant.
Yeah. How do you, Ryan, I'll ask you the same question. So there's a lot that I would certainly since COVID, the content creator space for smart homes has grown. I think exploded with COVID. I think a lot of people say, well, I've got nothing to do. I'm into smart home. I'll create a YouTube channel. You've got 30,000 subscribers. Chris, I think, Ryan, you're 20-odd thousand. How do you manage to keep the content different enough to have people coming back? Because there's a lot of people doing the same thing. how do you manage to create your little niche, whereas you're still keeping people coming back?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people, I mean, obviously you can talk about the same subject. You go out and you search any subject, you're going to find numerous videos about it. But I think it's the particular take that you have with it, your experience, your, you know, life story, however it is, your particular perspective on something. So like with my channel, I started it back in, I think 2019, and then went on past that point and kind of just, you know, onesie twosie videos a year, and then started taking it seriously shortly after that, you know, that started. And then just kind of did it, you know, obviously it's for fun. But I was actually reading a book, Crushing It by Gary Vaynerchuk. And that was the one that kind of inspired me to start a YouTube channel. It's like, hey, there's a subject that you know a lot about of, and I've been doing smart home stuff since, you know, back in my first house in 05. So I was like, okay, let's maybe turn that into a channel and use that as potentially a side hobby hustle sort of thing. And so kind of turn that into there. But like, I think everybody has, like you said, with Chris, you know, people who are good at explaining things, you can pretty much pick a subject and then just go out there and create content. And as long as folks are searching for it, they're going to come out and they're going to want to watch it. So.
Yeah. And I think for me, I really don't know the answer to that question. It's hard to know, right? I think it's when you watch certain creators, not just in any space, not just in home automation or anything, you pick up on how they do it, what they do, the type of videos they make, and you're like, oh, I like what they do, and I'm going to stick with that thing. There are a few creators out there, one starts with an M, that caters to an incredibly wide audience and does crazy things, right? Gives away money. I guess that's probably one of the biggest things. For us to be able to keep those folks coming in, everybody knows this that does YouTube. You know how many people are your subscribers that watch and how many are not. So somebody's looking for something and then they find it, and then they may bookmark your page, subscribe in case you do something later on. I often think about that too, because if I make a video on the Nest thermostat, which is a pain in the butt to try to integrate, that is a very specific tutorial. And if you don't own a Nest thermostat, there's no point in watching that. I'm not making an entertainment video on how to, I mean, I could make videos that are more entertaining and everyone would watch it and would be a wider audience. But I think it's just people looking for specific things. And if you have a big enough variety, that's why they come back and look at your channel potentially.
Yeah. You can cast a wider net, but at the same time, you know, like you said, you know, your subscriber base are the ones you may develop, you know, people who are in the community that like to come and ask questions, like to be part of the community. But the vast majority, I know, of my content is search-based. So people just find the content and they subscribe just because that was good, or they're looking for something similar. But, you know, a lot of the targeted content is search. So you do have your core group that you cater to, but at the same time, I think it's, you just kind of do stuff that makes it's interesting to you. And then a lot of times your audience will pick up on that as well.
Yeah, and I'm guessing a lot of it does come down to being true to yourself, not trying to imitate other ones you're doing. So the reason they're coming back is they've maybe discovered you, Ryan, because they've done the search, but actually they stick with you because actually they like your personality. Mm-hmm. How you came across and delivered that message. I mean, I know myself. I mean, I devour YouTube smart home videos like nothing, but I still come back to my favorites. I mean, you always have the ones you go back to because you like and you enjoy the personality and how they deliver the message or they just resonate with you more. So is a big part of it just being natural, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say so. Cause my background is in engineering and IT. And so one of the things I've had to do is learn how to explain technical concepts to folks that are not technical. So that helps me, I think, make better content. Cause like, as Chris says, it's not as easy as just going in and saying, here's how I did it. You have to kind of backtrack your learning all the way to the beginning. And then, okay, how do I package this in a way that I can teach somebody how to do it from this one video? Not like, go do these 7 prerequisites and then come back and watch this video. Like, how can a person sit down and watch this video start to end and actually get the concept?
Yeah. Good. Okay. Chris, question before I move on to Ryan. What has been the most enjoyable video to make?
And this is where I did my homework, right? So I jokingly said a spook video. I don't know if you've watched that spook video or read the comments on that one. That is probably my most commented on video. I'm going to say it's probably not one of my best videos to that I made out there, but anyway, that was a joke. That's really, I mean, that's a Spook is an amazing little tool that you can use in Home Assistant, right? And it gives you all kinds of information on it. But I talked a lot and it's really long, 30 minutes. I probably talked 30 minutes and showed web pages for 30 minutes and people just said that was crap.
That's a lot of news.
It's tough. But it wasn't the fun. I mean, I think one of the most favorite videos I had was disconnecting the internet to see what still worked after I did that, because we talk a lot about local control here in Home Assistant. Yep. And I just want to unplug it and see. I also want to unplug the power one day and see what happens. Although that's being done for me in my neighborhood apparently already. So I just let it happen. But that one was a lot of fun in terms of filming the video and seeing what happens. And I want to also say that in terms of a technology solution, the video that I did on the transducer, ultrasonic. Thank you. I'll wake up. Ultrasonic sensor that I did for the garage, for the car pulling in the garage. That was a lot of fun to play with and build and try to film that. I like filming when I can do like down shots of like the equipment I'm playing with and stuff. I don't get to do a lot of that in the way my studio is set up because I don't have a lot of room here. But when I do get to, and I have like the soldering iron out and playing with stuff like that, that's a lot of fun because you're building something, you're demonstrating it, and then you go into Home Assistant and kind of show how it all works together. So I answered your question with three videos, I think. One joke and two. And I got to go back and say, I don't want to say the Spook video was not because of Spook. It's because my delivery was pretty dry and everyone picked up on that. Yet 40,000 people watched it. So I don't know. It's one of my most watched videos, probably.
It's a lot. This is a lot. I don't know how to phrase this question. Does your enjoyment of making a video post-publishing get more depending on the views? So if I'll try and rephrase that in a way. You make a video and it's okay. Whether it was enjoyable or not, it's questionable. It was okay. It was a video that went out. You published it. But the views skyrocket. That little endorphin rush of, this is good. So, to example, Chris, Spook, you might not have been the most enjoyable to make, but you referenced it. Is that because the views are so high? Is that
controversial? Or the algorithm, or I mean, there's so many things that YouTube, it's an art form and it changes every week, right? Algorithm and everything, but maybe they like the little picture of the ghost and, you know, the expression. Most videos in the Mr. Beast era, you have to be screaming silently in your face on the thumbnail in order for someone to click on it, right? So
I hate having to do that.
Yeah. So maybe that's it, right? Or maybe because of the number of comments it got, it was pushed up in the algorithm. What really gets me is you'll see next to that one, the add-ons. Yep. Those add-on videos, I do them about once a year. Last year's, and I kept paying attention to this, last year's top add-ons video was still number one in the last video, the videos in the last 48 hours category on there, pretty much week to week for a year. So, it could be just the content, or the word top or whatever in there, but those seem to be the biggest ones. Right. And you think that's probably one of the easiest videos to make. Because you're just showing what your favorite thing is, and yet it's the top video that is on my channel or top videos, right? So,
and it is odd, not to labor the point on the number of views, but it's odd because you can't imagine 40,000 people are YouTubing Spook on Home Assistant. It's quite particular. Most people are checking Home Assistant install, Home Assistant add-on, Home Assistant new release.
Getting started
in Home Assistant, all that. So for Spook to be up with 40,000 views,
it gets you. You go back to that thing where you think, well, this is the crappiest video I made. It's going to get terrible views.
Yep.
But I've got to make a video this week because I got to feed the algorithm and all that nonsense. And it turns out to be one of your most viewed videos. And then you got to go back and figure out, well, what the heck? Why did that happen?
How did I do that?
Can I do it again, please?
Good stuff. Okay. Ryan, I'll come over to you now. Okay. Let me just quickly change my screen. So Ryan, give me an overview of the, the introduction I gave probably didn't do you justice, but you're a, there's Home Assistant there, there's non-Home Assistant. What was it really that got you to creating the channel, and how have you managed to navigate the YouTube algorithm?
Yeah. So, like I said, I started it. My first video was the kind of a going over the, I bought one of those Nest remote, the remote thermostat things for the Nest where you can have it in another room, which ironically I still use to this day. And I just, it was terrible. I filmed it on a phone, whatever. It was just more of like, hey, here's how this thing works. And then a year later I made another video, and a year later another video. So it just kind of started off slowly, but I started out just kind of picking stuff up around the house that I was already using. And like I said, I've been doing home automation X10 days, like way back when. So I've been doing it for quite a while. I love doing working with, playing with new tech, new products. Yeah. So all I kind of started with just stuff that I had, things that I was going through. You know, I bought a leak sensor and did a video on it. So just kind of stuff that I thought, you know, issues I ran into, like the sixth video there about trying to integrate Nest with Home Assistant, which I think I ended up having two or three videos on that because it changed as it went through. So just kind of finding issues, problems that I ran into and I solved. And then as it grew and grew, then I finally started getting contacted by brands to take a look at products and things like that. So a lot of, you know, I would say it's half product overview review videos and half Home Assistant projects. So like my most popular videos are typically going to be the getting started with Home Assistant. I've done two of those, and I think they're in my top five.
What do you enjoy doing the most, the Home Assistant ones or the reviews?
I like doing the project ones probably the absolute most, because those are, you know, those are just things that I think are fun, things that I think I'm going to do. Of course, the product review videos are great because I get to play with new tech. I get to try out new stuff, and, you know, sometimes they pay the bills. So, you know, it's good. I got laid off last year, and so I kind of had to jump with both feet into it. So I kind of took classes on working with brands and things like that. And so, so during that period, I was kind of really getting into the business side of YouTube and building up, take classes, you know, joining groups and things like that and figuring out.
And has that made a difference? Do you feel that's going to be equipped you to be far more kind of aware of how to kind of do the YouTube and the marketing, the PR side and stuff?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's actually helped me grow on that side. Also, working with brands, figuring out, you know, how to get kind of what you want out of the brand relationships while also giving them the content that they're looking for. So I think it's been good. Again, the whole YouTube algorithm changes daily almost. So I kind of just go with how I feel about it and kind of what I see is working. But the same thing, you'll post a video and then all of a sudden I did one on Local Tuya, setting up Local Tuya in Home Assistant, because actually my neighbor asked me about it. He's a Home Assistant guy, and he was like, hey, how do I do this? So I made it, just kind of threw together, made a quick video. It ended up being like my second most popular video. Okay. How'd that happen? So
we spoke about it before we started recording. We spoke about balancing the combating the YouTube algorithm with work-life balance, etc. So Chris, I'll come to you first. How do you do it? How do you maintain a successful YouTube channel, keeping the content coming out while still having a day job and kids and family life? How does it work?
It's not easy. And we were talking, like you said before, and it I'm going to use the word grind. YouTube is a grind. I mean, to satisfy what, if you want to grow, you kind of have to do it, right? And I get jealous of people that can do five or six videos on content over the course of a month, and now I can't, but it's definitely a balance, and you have to just kind of find spots to fit it in, right? If I have an hour here, in fact, when we delayed, you know, we were talking about delaying our start earlier, you know, I had 30 minutes booked out for this, and okay, I'm going to jump in and start writing my script for my video that I have to film tomorrow so that I can get it out by the weekend, because I've got kids basketball, I've got soccer games, I've got these other things. Work is just terrible, right? So it's just finding a spot, and you have to make priority for it, right? At the end of the day, I'm tired of work. I'm tired of doing things. I want to sit down and veg on, you know, a few dozen episodes of some terrible show I don't want to watch, you know, just to forget about the day, right? But or I could come in and make a video and do something like that. So it's about how much you want it, and how much you feel like you want to get things done. And I mean, that's where it is. It's setting priorities and sticking to those. And we talked too about the cadence of the videos. If you want to be successful on YouTube, you have to be consistent. And being consistent can be filming a video or publishing a video every week, and then publishing a video every 2 weeks or whatever your cadence might be. I've seen successful people do every 2 week videos, and that may be where I go right now, just because of the amount of life stuff that's happening. Do I want to turn this into a profession? I don't know. Maybe at some point. There's a lot of risk to doing that with a family and all that kind of stuff. So I think that was a really long answer to say it's a challenge, and you just have to make time for it if you really want to do it. And what one other thing about that is, sometimes you sacrifice quality to get the video out. And I hate to say that, but sometimes if I'm going on 2 weeks and I haven't released something, I will release something that I've been waiting to release, but it'll be polished, but can it be better? Maybe. I guess it's true of every video. Can a video be better after you watch? You're like, oh, I could have done three or four more things to that, or done something a little bit differently. So, yeah, just trying to fit it in with everything else. It's just a challenge to get it done.
Ryan, your thoughts?
Yeah, I will echo exactly what Chris said. So similar situation. I've got three kids. I've got a full-time job. And YouTube is a full-time job on top of that. And so it can easily overwhelm. And that's one of the things I've been dealing with this year was it's been too much. Towards the end of the year last year, around Christmas time, right? It's the super busy time for most content creators. And I'm just trying to churn out everything I possibly can. And, you know, really struggling with getting things done and trying to, you know, get it all done well at the same time. So one of the things I'm trying to do this year as well is try to be a little bit more intentional about what I work on and the mixture that I want to do in the videos. I got the great opportunity to go to CES this year, and I only really put out three shorts because of it. I didn't actually do any major. I was kind of thinking about it, but then I thought, no, you know what? I'm not going to burn, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks trying to squeeze content out of CES. Let's just use the relationships we've made there and the shorts I put out, and then we'll continue working on something else. So it's definitely, like I said, it's definitely a challenge. It evolves constantly, and you kind of just have to find your own through line with it and just say, this is what I'm going to do. I'm only going to do this. I'm not going to chase the trends. I'm not going to chase this, that, or the other thing. Just kind of focus on what it is you want to put out and try to get organized as best you can. I struggle with trying to, I would love to, you know, write a month's worth of scripts and then film a month's worth of videos and then edit a month's worth of videos, but that just never seems to happen.
Yeah. And you've got to also consider the buy-in from the family, right? Mm-hmm. Like my wife is not technology based. In fact, we're doing a calendar. I have the Revive calendar on my tablets and stuff. And we moved to a new house, and I'm going to get a little sidetracked here for a second, but I put out a tablet yesterday because now my kids need to do their chores. And with the new automation for to-do lists or whatever on Home Assistant, you know, I can at midnight every night, it adds the daily chores. You need to unload the dishwasher. You need to do the clothes and hang your clothes up or whatever it is. Right. And the calendar is getting so busy that I want the calendar out there. I have the technology. So I set it out there on the counter, and my wife's like, you're not going to put that on that calendar. You can put it over by your coffee maker where we're not seeing it all the time. Right. And so you have to, this, what I do is all technology. I work in technology. I play with technology. I have stuff around the house, and I've got to give my wife credit for putting up with it. I've got smart switches. I've got automations that do things. So I don't know if she just really tolerates it or she prefer not to have it, but doing the videos on top of that is another thing. You've got to just get the buy-in and say, look, I'm going to do this. And the one thing I can guarantee you 100% is I will never make a video that interferes with something that I've got to do from a family perspective, right? The video will have to wait. Now, when I'm a multimillionaire YouTube star and I'm making videos for a living, then, you know, I'll say I need to film this video to keep up. Yeah. But anyway, until then, right, you've got to just do it when you can and not let it interfere with anything else related to family stuff, or it's going to go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly same thing here. My wife has been very supportive with everything and all the stuff that breaks and all the new stuff that shows up on the front doorstep and which robot vacuum we're using today kind of thing. But, you know, I think it's, but at the same time, she gets to play with the new tech. My wife likes the tech, but she's not like, she doesn't like to fix the tech. So as long as it works, she's happy.
It's funny. It's funny you said it too, because there are times when something will fail, like some streaming service will be down or the phone will quit working. And I'm like, I hope that's not something that I've set up. And I'd be so relieved whenever it's something, somebody else's broken problem. I didn't break that one.
Yes, exactly.
So, yeah.
It usually ends up being me fixing it anyway, but yeah.
Yeah, we fix it, but we didn't break it. And I don't get credit for breaking the thing.
That's true. That's very true. Yeah, yeah.
But I do think it's an important point. I mean, that we spoke about the content and fighting the algorithm and the grind, for example, and balance and work-life balance. I touched on, I think it was episode 12 or episode 13 when I had Matt from Not Enough Tech and Andrea Dono on, and they were saying there's so much people don't see, the hours and hours of the late nights, the content, the videos and all that for the sake of a 10-minute video. And there's not an appreciation when you're on YouTube and you're flicking, scanning through a couple of videos and yes, that's rubbish and well, that's good, that's fine, whatever. People don't appreciate the amount of effort that's gone in to create the video. So from a gratification point of view, why do you keep going? And I'm being facetious with the question. It's a bit baity, but why do you keep going? Chris, you've touched on potential when you're a multi-million YouTuber or whatever. Yeah. But why do you keep going? Is it the love of the tech, the love of the, what is it that keeps you plugging this content?
There's probably a couple of reasons. And number one, I started it and I want to see where it can go, right? I want to see how far I can go with it. There may be a point where it's too much and I just have to say, well, this was a fun run. But if I continue to add subscribers, continue to see feedback, you know, things like, hey, I couldn't figure it out until I watched your channel, you know, the positive feedback. And I will say that probably 98% of my feedback has been positive. I haven't seen people just, except for the spook video. I haven't seen a lot of, you should read the comments sometime. I haven't seen a lot of negativity, but I also feel obligated to the community I've built over the last few years, right? I don't want to say I quit, see y'all later, because they've been there along with me as well, right? And I want to make sure that I'm still providing stuff that's valuable to them and I can keep up with that community. And it's like a little mini family, right? So you don't want to just leave them out in the cold. So it's just kind of keeping that going, see where I go with it. And maybe something will come of it one day. And it's not just monetarily stuff, right? You're building connections, you're building networks out with, I mean, I wouldn't know any of y'all without being in this community. So that's a big thing too.
Yeah. Ryan.
Yeah. Everything that Chris said, exactly true. You know, for me, I really enjoy helping people. I enjoy solving problems. That's always been a passion of mine. So being able to actually help folks out there that need assistance, or they ask a question on the comments or the Discord server, and, you know, be able to actually help them, you know, do something cool with their home. I think that's really pays off a lot for me too. But to echo also what Chris said, you know, a lot of what I've learned for YouTube has helped me in my day job as well. I always end up kind of sticking my toe in the marketing side or generating content for the company I'm working for, or, you know, potentially being a full-time role doing something like that similarly. So, you know, it's definitely, there's a ton to learn with that. And even able to help my wife, she's a gifted teacher in elementary school. And now she has to do the monthly video news for her school. So I've been able to help her step up her video editing a little bit as well.
You know, that's crazy, because my wife is a gifted elementary school teacher as well. And she does an end of year video.
Oh yeah.
And so she knows I have the stuff to do it, so she'll ask for help on that. Or her town hall needs certain soundtrack, I can do the soundtrack, and I can do it quickly now. Before I'd trudge through that stuff and okay, I don't know what software I use, and now it's just like that. But it's amazing between you and I, you know, the similarities.
Well, it's like almost you stamp, you know, like the people that become, you become a, you know, a smart home, you know, YouTuber because you have this background and this background in common. I think a lot of folks have a very similar background. I think, you know, a lot of the smart home enthusiasts come from either a tech background, an engineering background, or an IT background. And a lot of those folks, I think, also, you know, have spouses that come from education backgrounds too. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, no, that's, my wife's been a teacher for 16 years now, and Yeah, she absolutely loves that, but it would drive me nuts. I could not do that. Especially elementary school kids. I could not do that.
Yeah, it's interesting how you point out the engineering background too, right? That's an interesting point about home automation in general these days. If you're not buying some of that off the shelf Lutron or whatever locked in stuff, you're ending up doing a home assistant solution. And when I started Home Assistant, it was YAML. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what, I think Lua was what Vera had, which mm-hmm. I was not, and it's nothing against Vera. I'm sure they've come a long way since then, but that thing would lock up. And that was my wife's first experience with my Home Assistant setup was Vera. And the alarm would turn the alarm off at a certain time in the morning before we woke up just to be ready for the day. And it would fail half the time. So she'd open a door and the alarm would go off and stuff. Lock up. Yeah. Well, I'm very careful about that now. I'm worried about one of my sensors that are taped to the door falling off in the middle of the night and then the sensor going like at the door open. But just home automation in general it's come a long way, but there's still, if you want to do specific things, you need to know how to do some YAML. You need to know how you're going to build these automations. You need to understand logic. Mm-hmm. And some like engineering stuff, right? Even today. So
for sure. You need to have the mindset of software development, programming, like you said, logic, being able to break a problem down into the statements that are given by the computer. I think, you know, AI is going to definitely help with that because you can present AI with a problem and it could break it down for you. That's something it's very good at. But at the same time, I think if you are in this space and you want to go one tier above either buying everything from one vendor or, you know, you have to get into this into the back end part of it and getting more advanced.
So excellent segue. That was a nice transition actually. So the theme and topic of this episode is starting your smart home from scratch. So every year, without a doubt, January rolls around, February rolls around, and YouTube is filled with how to start your smart home in this year, XXX. So I thought I would hop on the bandwagon and theme this podcast about it. So if you were to start your smart home from scratch, where would you go with it? So I mean, I know personally, I think my first item was a Hue. I had one Philips Hue bulb, the hub, which I thought was extortionate at the time. It must have been about £70 for one bulb and a hub. And I thought, what have I done? But I had so much fun playing with one bulb. And then bought an Echo Dot. And then I think OpenHAB. I tinkered with OpenHAB. I tried to do it. I'm not a programmer by any stretch of imagination. And I just struggled with getting my head around OpenHAB. It was a real struggle. Then found Home Assistant. And I found it was easier just to Google and copy and paste someone else's YAML code, kind of bastardize what they had done, force it into my Home Assistant, install it on a Raspberry Pi, and it worked. And I think I then fell in love with Home Assistant. But it was a very painful progression of just stumbling one way, buying another device, trying. If it didn't work, I would buy something else. And again, stumbling. There was not an easy, as a new consumer in the field, an easy path to follow. Now, yes, at the time, SmartThings was really relatively new, but I wasn't really, there was too much going on at the time. So I kind of stumbled my way. If you could start from scratch today, would it be Home Assistant or would you go down another route? And if it is Home Assistant, how would you buy the devices that you'd come in? And I'm not going to kind of target one of these. I'm happy just to have this as a bit of an open forum.
So I would definitely pick a platform to start with and a technology to start with and just stick with it as much as I could. Definitely think if you're going to do anything more advanced than just simple on-offs or schedules, Home Assistant's the only thing to do, right? I know there's other products like Homey and things like that out there, but you needed a more advanced brained, centralized platform no matter what you're going to do, even if you are in one particular technology. If I was an Apple person, I'd probably start with HomeKit stuff.
It's funny you're saying that, Ryan, because I do seen some of the HomeKit stuff now. I think had HomeKit been out when I started, I'd have probably jumped into HomeKit because you know what? It looks the shit. It seems to work.
It's all kind of rewrapped other protocols, and so they've done a great job at it. It looks good. It works well. And it's that walled garden that you can kind of get into that's not so bad. And it also has extensions out if you want to go into Home Assistant. So, I mean, I think if you're in the Apple universe, I would do it. I'm not an Apple person yet sitting here staring at an iPad, but I wouldn't do that if I was me, because I don't have Apple everything, but it definitely is it's a nice structure to put things in and makes it easy to adapt things. But
yeah, I don't know that I would. I'm not Apple either. In fact, I fight Apple. I mean, I don't want to get this into a religious discussion about which is better, right? But one of the things that drives me nuts about Apple is that my wife will get a text from one of her. She's got a Samsung. Mm-hmm. She'll get a message from a text message or whatever they send from somebody with a video in it, and it's like 120p or something. You can't see anything in it,
yep.
Right? And the only way we can get videos that way is using something like a different messaging app like Signal or whatever. So I haven't spent a lot of time with HomeKit. Now I do use my Ecobee is actually connected to Home Assistant via HomeKit. Mm-hmm. And there are probably some other things in my infrastructure that are set up that way, but I would probably go Home Assistant. And I'll tell you why, because back when I was in the Vera days, and I'm a visual person, when I did Vera, the interface was, this is a family show, right? It was terrible. It was really bad. And I don't want to put Vera out. I think they still have products out there. I've seen them advertised.
I've never heard of Vera, Chris.
What's that?
I had Vera.
I've never even heard of
Vera. I have a brand new Vera in a box somewhere in my house. I don't know what to do with it. Probably nothing ever. But it would fail. I couldn't program it. I would make a change and it would erase it when the UI refreshed. There's a lot of issues, right? And my brother actually showed me a screenshot of some Home Assistant deal in the early days. And I'm like, And what hooked me was I went to Home Assistant's website like 5 years, six, seven, I don't even know how long it's been, years ago, right? I downloaded it and put it on something and I was already working on it, right? So I already had a platform and I just never looked back after that. I may not have started making videos on it, but I was building stuff with it for a long time. And it's probably unfair to say that just because I haven't played with a lot of other platforms. Like I looked at OpenHAB for a little bit. And in fact, I think I looked at OpenHAB during the time I was doing the Home Assistant stuff at the beginning. And it didn't impress me as much as OpenHAB.
I find it so painful.
Yeah.
OpenHAB users, I'm pissing on it, but I really struggle with it.
Well, I just don't think you're not going to be able to really beat Home Assistant as long as it continues to have the developer support behind it. It's the biggest one out there, so it's going to attract the most developers. And as long as they don't do anything to anger the community, I think they're going to be stay on top for sure. And I think I definitely would say anybody who's going to do anything, more complicated, Home Assistant's definitely way to go. Only reason why I suggested HomeKit was because it seems to be easy for folks. And I know a lot of folks that come onto the channel and ask questions, they aren't ready to go into Home Assistant. They aren't ready to take that step as far as, to go into something else, start figuring out YAML. It's gotten so much easier. I did an re-onboarded my Home Assistant last year, went through the process. It's so much nicer than it used to be, but it's still not, you guys
still not off the shelf plug and play.
No, you still have to get into YAML more than you like to, I think it's definitely gotten a lot better, especially now that the hardware's come out. So you can just buy the hardware and you don't have to, flash things onto a Raspberry Pi, even though I think that's the better way of doing it, or onto a thin client, but it's definitely the platform to be at if you're going to make two things talk to each other.
And that's a big thing. As I'm going through my HACS thing, I have 60 integrations from HACS installed in my Home Assistant, or 60 add-ons, right? There are integrations and front-end things too, but I have 60 of those things. So I don't have a huge house. I don't have a ton of things, but I have 60 things that do something. Yep. Or roughly, right? Not every one of those I'm using all the time.
Once you, I think, but like, that's what I tell people about Home Assistant. Like the first time you boot Home Assistant up and go into the integrations tab, you're like, oh my God, it can see this, 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 this. It can see my TV. It can see that, people start thinking, hey, what can I do this? Can I do this? And you just start integrating things that you have, no business to do.
And that's a good point, because in the early days that didn't happen. this is fairly recent or relatively recent, where I turned it on and it says, we discovered your television that you just bought last week. Okay. So I did that. I'm one of the people that signed up the TV and I'm like, now what do I do with it? I don't know.
Yeah. No,
that's I'll go turn point. It off when my kids won't go to bed. I'll be in my office. There goes the TV.
That would be a great way for them to add on too, is to have suggested, you know, suggested automations based on your integration. So, hey, you click on the LG TV integration or the integration. It says, hey, here's the most popular automations that we've seen people use in the blueprints related to this particular project. Like that would be great for people to see what power you can do. Cause yeah, you may not know, but like an LG WebOS TV can accept notifications and you can send notifications to it. And you can, I did that whole stuff with my kid of, okay, it's 7:15. You got to get to school. TVs turn off automatically.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that is when you look at commercials for smart homes, you'll see the, what they show is like someone pushes a button and then the lights, like it's evening mode for movie mode or whatever. They'll push a button. The lights will dim. The TV will come on. The candle lights itself for ambiance. The fireplace kicks in. I'm like, but you know what? In my house, I can't go to Best Buy or wherever and buy an off-the-shelf system to make all that happen. Yeah. No matter what brand it is, right? You still have to program that stuff. So smart home stuff like that, you still have to build that out. Even if it's Home Assistant or HomeKit or something else. I find the large big box shipper, can I say the word on this channel? The Amazon stuff, to build a scene or what, I forgot what they call it in Amazon. It, to me, it's hard. It's harder than going to Home Assistant and building an automation for something.
I agree. Yep.
For one, there, if you look at the Amazon app, the device app, and it finds these things somehow, like I have it tied to Home Assistant, so it finds a bunch of lights and everything, but it finds everything. And then you're like, it categorizes it and puts it in places. And you're like, I don't know how to get that thing over here to this automation or this scene. It's just hard.
I agree. It's a horrible app. Yeah.
So even if you buy off the shelf and you buy something that's consumer ready, it's still going to require some work to get it to work the way you want it to.
For sure. And there's a lot of that stuff too, just either, and they're so limited. Like you open up something you don't have. I can't add a condition. I can't add these other things. And it's just, that becomes kind of like very basic of turn on, turn off. That's it.
Yeah. And then of course now Home Assistant has blocks. Are they call it blocks now in automations? I forgot what that term is.
Building blocks.
Yeah.
They separated out the two, which makes it much easier for people to get in there.
And they're trying to make it more consumer friendly, right? So you, instead of saying, if and or nor than gates or whatever, here's a building block. You're either going to do this or you're going to do that, or you do this and that, or if these conditions are met, then you do these things. So there, I think there's a lot of work towards making that more consumer digestible, to make it where more people who don't have to have as much background like we do build stuff out.
Which I think AI is really going to help with that too, because people can, like I said, they can ask the question. You know, obviously ChatGPT is not there where you can just give it something, but it does help build things more rapidly or help you break through the code. It would be super nice, and this is probably going to creep people out, but if you had a inbuilt AI in Home Assistant that would watch things that you do on a consistent basis and says, "Hey, I noticed that every day at 7:30 in the morning you open the garage door. Would you like me to go ahead and set that up as an automation?" So
that's coming, Ryan.
I know it's coming. It's just like that will make it convenient for people, because then they could say, "Oh yeah, I want to do that. And also turn this light on and off. Or hey, when I leave, I want you to do this, 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 and this."
You know what I hate about the Amazon smart speaker is I'll say, turn off a light. Oh, did you know you can? I'm like, shut up.
Yeah.
I don't want to know.
That was actually on my list of things I wouldn't do. And I would not know, no Google or no Alexa. I invested very heavily in the Google world. I've got, you know, the screens and different, I have stuff in boxes from the first generation homes, and they were fantastic when they first came out. And somehow they've made them worse consistently month over month. They can't hear a thing you say. They set the wrong device. You saw me mute a second ago because my son was locked out, because instead of closing the garage door, it locked the garage door entry door. And I'm like, it's just like, you think it would be getting smarter, but they're getting dumber. And I don't understand how that's
possible. And you're talking about Google, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I noticed that with about a year ago, before we moved into this house, I have a second gen or whatever Google's dot thing or whatever it is. And it couldn't hear me half the time. And I did some research and they basically started making those stupid. So you would have the new one. Plus they gutted the smart speaker departments at both Amazon and Google. Yep. So they're not really doing a lot of development on that stuff.
Yeah. That's why I'm excited to see the Assist and things like that coming out. And I think people are already building retrofit kits for their existing hardware, but it just sucks because you invest all this money in this hardware and then they make it worse and worse and you have no control over it because it's their software and their servers that build off the top of. And it's
on that then. So we can categorically agree Home Assistant, nothing changes. It's still the platform you go to. Mm-hmm. Three of us agree on that one. Okay. Smart speaker then, Ryan, you've said no Google.
If your home gets above a certain size, you just can't. They've gotten worse. The speakers talk over each other now. They used to, that was like one of the things when they first came out was only the closest speaker would talk. Now they randomly will talk. They'll just say different things. It's just, it's terrible now. Yeah. They don't understand a word you're saying or they'll start playing music. I don't get it.
Would you still have a smart speaker or would you, the voice gone?
I think there's definitely a place for it. I saw actually at CES, Akara had their little, it was a little puck and it was obviously it was non-functional. So it was just it was a concept, but it reminded me, it was Black Mirror-esque, but in a good way. It was a little puck that you'd have on a magnetic dock and you just grab it and you'd say something into it and then you put it back and it would only activate when you pick it up. So no wake words, no listening to it.
And five stacks.
Yeah. So that's it. Right. And it was just, again, prototype, whatever. But I'm like, that makes a lot of sense. Reach over, you grab the thing or you touch the thing and it does it. I think the concept of having to scream at the top of your lungs for a device to hear you around your house doesn't make a lot of sense these days. I think we've evolved past it. Either that or your house is smart enough to just anticipate and do things like the cinema mode, for example. You know, you pause your TV, lights come on, like that sort of stuff. So
yeah,
I really found when I first set it up, the smart speaker was the 95% of the way the family interacted with it.
Absolutely.
But now they want tablets. They want finer control. They want to be able to actually do something without trying six different words.
Chris, your thoughts on the smart home?
Yeah, I think the smart, I would like to ditch all the smart speakers, to be honest. If Home Assistant gets to the point where we can talk to it and have it do the things, that's what I use a smart speaker for myself. But here's kind of something that's bit me a little bit is I wanted my kids to get used to the smart speakers. It's taken a few years and now they are. Now they ask it things. Now they set the alarm clocks, right? That's what wakes them up in the morning. My son loves asking that thing for jokes. So nonstop jokes, right? So if you take away those smart speakers, Home Assistant is going to respond with jokes, it's trivia. And I'll find myself, we'll say, what does that term mean? Or when is the A&M game when they're going to win the NCAA tournament this year? Thank you very much. So I'll ask those questions, but there's no way Home Assistant's going to respond. So there is a place for the smart speakers to give you information, but that they're for controlling the house, maybe not so much anymore. Case in point, I'll tell the kitchen to turn on, which is the kitchen lights. And there's a group, it has two sets in there and turn on kitchen and then boom, the lights are out. No, I said turn on. So I'll get very aggressive with the little box and say, turn on the kitchen. And then sure enough, it comes back on. Oh, by the way, shut up.
Yeah. The worst one is when you tell it to do something and it says, and it thinks you said, turn all lights on, which in our houses means a lot of lights. And then it sits there and it tells you, this is offline and this is offline. And then everything turns on.
Yeah. Because it's interesting. The three of us have all experienced the same thing. So when I started in the journey, I love my dots, I love my echoes. And they were at 95% of everything was channeled through those devices. I only speak to it now for Spotify. It's the only time I'll say play a playlist on Spotify. That's not a smart home speaker. That's a speaker with a voice assistant that can turn some Spotify on. Have we moved past the smart home speaker because a Home Assistant or, and when I mean home, because our automations, the way we've set up our home, has evolved past that. And does the main consumer still need the smart home speaker because they're still at that early stage of smart home maturity?
Well, I think from a smart speaker perspective for Home Assistant, if you're gonna get Home Assistant and put it in your house and you sign up for Nabu Casa, which is a whole nother thing, right? And by the way, even if you don't use access controls, I think supporting Nabu is fantastic. It's not that much. It helps us have all this stuff, right? But I'm trying to think, let's say my in-laws or somebody that I know say, okay, I'm going to put Home Assistant in your house and I'm going to want you to pay for Nabu Casa. Oh, you couldn't just tell your smart speaker to turn that light on behind you?
got him.
Nabu Casa, you know, you got to pay for it. And then in order for your speakers to work, right? So you've got that layer of now you've got a monthly cost or yearly cost now for this in order to use your smart speakers. Now you can do it. I think I haven't tried it in a long time. You can do it locally, it's a lot more work to get it set up. And then when you update the media player and all that stuff, then the integration breaks and you got to re-authenticate to Amazon. I mean, a whole bunch of garbage, but I don't know that a consumer tied into Home Assistant is going to think, okay, I bought the thing, but now I have to buy smart speakers from another company to be able to talk to it. Right. So in terms of smart speakers, I don't know, probably for me, I would love for the local voice control to be more evolved for my family to use it. My extended family, by the way, they wouldn't have those things in their house anyway. They don't like them. They don't trust them. They think they're listening to everything, which they are. I just don't care because everybody's listening to everything I say anyway.
Yeah. Well, you carry around a device that can listen to
exactly.
But yeah, I would also say like I think we're also kind of evolving past the whole concept of voice commands because maybe when AI catches up, that gets a little bit more intelligent, it can ask when it's unsure. I mean, I think if we were able to add those sort of things back in, it might help a little bit. But I think people just get tired of having to yell the same words over and over again at their devices to do things. I think it was a new thing. We tried it, and I think it'll have a place. But I think people are going to be using it less and less. You know, and people don't want to pay for integrations to things like, you know, the whole MyQ debacle that happened recently. Yeah. That, you know, I went in and bought the Radigos and I've never looked back, but now
you're telling me you don't want to pay $15 for IFTT
for something that I already
Does that even work? I had IFTT for a long time and it half the time didn't ever do anything.
I think you can still do it. Well, actually, so I just purchased the Tesla. So now I'm one of those people. My car got totaled. So I bought a Tesla and it has built in right there MyQ integration. I am not paying even $1 a month to click a button and use the thing that I paid for on the internet connection that I paid for in the car that I paid for to open my garage door. I'll use a button. I'll use a voice command. I'll use an automation. I'm not going to freaking do that. That's not going to happen. So this concept of being able to iteratively add in and make you have to pay like you do if you're streaming subscriptions for smart home, that's a no-go for I think a lot of people too. So to the point of, you know, Nabu Casa is one thing because you're directly supporting the folks, but yeah, I don't think people are going to want to pay monthly fees to interact with their smart home via, you know, whatever. That's the reason why we started doing Home Assistant, so we could do it the way we wanted to and on our own hardware and not have to rely on somebody else to give us that ability.
Okay. So far we've said in 2024, starting your smart home from scratch, Home Assistant, no smart home speakers, are we all in agreement?
For control, not for control. What their other purpose is, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'd say I almost today would much rather have like a nice Sonos setup for multi-room speakers than I would.
I agree.
Than I would the fact that they keep taking away and giving us back, you know, features that we already had. So.
Yep. And anything with no subscriptions. Okay, so it's a good start. What would you run your Home Assistant on? So I think 90% of people start on a Raspberry Pi, and some have not evolved past that, some have. I'm now on an Intel NUC,
Mm-hmm.
I wish I'd stopped.
Which is overkill.
Which is overkill. You're absolutely right. So to be the very geeky answer, I'd say running it inside of a CT container inside of Proxmox. But that is the extremely geeky answer for running it under a hypervisor. Yep. Thin client, I think, is a good solution. Yeah. I have been running on a 8 gig Raspberry Pi 4 for a long time. Thought it was, you know, there's no way. Yeah, this is great. I can do everything I need to do with it. I put it on the thin client. I'm like, this is so much better. I like this so much more now. And it was like $65 on eBay. So why not? Yeah.
So what was it? What was your driver to get to the thin client? I'm curious.
A lot of people were asking about, this was, you know, even a year ago, you couldn't get pies. So community people were saying, hey, because my second most popular video is the getting started with Raspberry Pi Home Assistant. So people are, hey, I can't get a hold of one. What should I do? And so I kind of poked around and saw, oh, thin clients were, you know, these are inexpensive. Being in IT, worked with them before, hacked them before, grabbed a Dell one off the internet and put it together. I'm like, oh, this is actually great. I think this is much faster. So I pulled the plug and migrated everything over to that as my primary driver. But now I can I've got a Google Coral that's in there. So I can use that for
Frigate.
Yep. Frigate. Yep. Haven't set it up yet, but I could if I needed to. So you can do so much more. It's all internal to the box. It's not, you know, I had it up on a pegboard. I had a solid state drive hanging off one side. I had my dongles hanging off the other. It just, you know, it was just terrible. Now it's up on a rack and it looks much better. And yeah.
You know, I don't, for people that are just basically doing basic stuff, I think the yellow was okay. It's gone. I think that's done away with. Now we've got the green, right? I've got a blue. I don't know why these colors, but I've got an Odroid N2 Plus. That's my production box. It's been that way for a long time. I've got a yellow that I use as kind of a backup playground. And then I've got I had the green, right? So to play around with that, if you can run it on a Raspberry Pi, you can run it on any of those platforms. But you're right. If you need to do extra stuff where you have to put a solid state drive on it, you don't want to hang stuff loose out like that. I'm not going to say my Zima board sitting right there on the table with a drive sitting underneath it with no case on it. But I think if you're just starting, then get one of the things you can buy as a package deal. Put an NVMe or whatever you are allowed to put in those and just run it that way.
Especially it comes with a wireless stick like Zigbee or Thread on board. That would be another a plus to that too.
Yeah. Because then you just put it on. And one of the things that draws me to these little boards like the Zima and like the Odroid and those is I don't have a lot of power outages here, but I like having stuff run when the power's out. So I've got UPSs on my network closet. I've got a UPS here on this computer. But you put something like an Odroid or a yellow, I mean, it might run for 2 or 3 days on a decent size consumer UPS or whatever. Maybe the rest of your house doesn't run, but at least that does, right? And, you know, and things like my cameras are plugged into the UPS. So I have things that will run when the power is out. So I don't want something that's going to suck the power out of everything. So running as minimal power consumption as possible is kind of one of the things I like to do. I went to an Odroid from a Raspberry Pi to an Ubuntu, I guess what you're calling a thin client. I'm not sure the definition of thin client these days, but
yeah, I think it just mostly has to do with the processor and the intent, right? You buy it as a thin client. And so they're usually cheaper because they're done with them or they're done with that particular project. They cycle them out and they're very inexpensive on the secondhand market.
Yeah. So, I mean, even that's fine, but your consumer is not going to run Proxmox. You're not going to run some of these other things. I go back to like my in-laws, if they're not going to buy anything, but if they said, come make my house do some things, I would probably put it on something like that, like a yellow or whatever, because I know they're not going to be a power user. The blue, I did run Frigate on the blue for a little bit, and then I decided to make a video and run it in Docker and standalone. So I did that.
Handle Frigate okay?
What's that?
Did the Odroid manage Frigate okay?
I think so. I don't have a ton of cameras, but I have a Coral. It will not, I wouldn't do it without a Coral. I mean, the Coral offloads a huge part of any processing that the Frigate stuff runs.
Yeah.
But then you start getting into your single point of failure. And, you know, if you want your lights to come on and for some reason forget when it goes crazy and start, there's five streams recording and something happens or whatever, I prefer to have that kind of stuff off onto another device. But yeah, I would go with something that's ready to go that you can just buy as a package deal, because there's no reason to install, burn a, or flash an SD card and put it in there and then try to set it so it boots off of the SSD if you happen to have one. It's just too hard for consumers to do that. So,
or for Home Assistant Green, does that come out installed in the box?
Yes.
I did yellow and I did blue. I skipped green.
Green does have the OS installed on it already, supervised OS on it, and so it's ready to go. You just need to buy, I think those you have to buy the, if you, whatever Wi-Fi technology, not Wi-Fi, whatever RF technology you want to use for it.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, that was the nicest thing about like having like SmartThings when it came out. I had the SmartThings hub. It was both Z-Wave and Zigbee. It was like, oh, it was all right there, ready to go. The only problem was is that it had a lot of stuff, a lot of problems with the software, and you couldn't touch it. And you had to hack it and all stuff. So I think customers probably want a relatively inexpensive, a relatively inexpensive product that has most major technologies on board.
Yeah. Okay, so we've agreed Home Assistant, no speaker or control, no subscriptions, and you want a Home Assistant relatively plug and play, and HA Green seems to be the option.
Yeah, for someone that's starting out, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I did a whole series on, and this is a while back, so I need to redo it, but a whole series on starting with Home Assistant, and it's using basically the Raspberry Pi. So, I would switch that up and do something like the yellow or green or something now.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Okay. I think that was a decent enough run through of starting your smart home from scratch. Good bit of conversation. I'm conscious of the time. We're approaching the hour, so to try and wrap it up quickly, we'll skip mystery questions for this episode. But I did get two community questions coming through. Quick fire round then. Ryan, I'll come to you first. What's the next smart home device you're looking forward to buying?
So this year I'll get a chance to play with some smart mowers. So full transparency, not purchasing it. It'll be part of a video. So.
Who was it? Because I got one too, and I tried to. I wanted to keep it.
Oh, this one I get to keep it.
That sucks. For you, for me.
I made sure. This is where it's important to know the negotiation tactics. Hopefully there's two. As I saw another one at CES from a large brand that I've been in contact with. I got a robot vacuum that I'm working with right now, but it's they had their version, which I think would be kind of cool to see somebody who from the vacuum world move into the mower world instead of being the other way around. A lot of these have been like, you know, Husqvarna, they're trying to develop their own smart, you know, so they're having to learn everything from scratch. Yeah, they know a bunch about mowing, but do they know a bunch about how to properly navigate a robot around a, you know, an unknown yard? So, but this one looks pretty cool. All-wheel drive. I'm actually going to take it out to my dad's house, who he lives on a hill, a very, very steep hill, and famous for when I was a little kid mowing, you had to sit on one side of the mower so it wouldn't roll down the hill. So I would be excited to see how it does in that environment, but yeah.
And are you going to video for that, Ryan? You sticking that video for that anytime soon?
I don't have it yet. And so it'll probably be late April, I think is when we're scheduled to bring it out. It'll probably arrive when I'm gone on vacation. So hopefully I can get them to not ship it while I'm on vacation.
same question to you, Chris, then. So small home device you're looking to, well, Ryan cheated by getting one that he's not buying. So I'll get home device you're looking to play with.
Well, so I actually have it sitting on the shelf over there. I haven't installed it yet. We talked a little bit about MyQ. I don't have a MyQ. I have a Genie. Is it a Genie? Something like that. Yeah. And before I moved in, we built this house and I knew we were going to have this garage door opener and it's cloud-based. And so I didn't take my old Z-Wave based opener from my old house because I didn't need it. And I said, and I even mentioned in one of my videos, I talked about, I had that this cloud-based thing and I'm going to see how it works out. And if it doesn't work out, I'll have to do something else. Well, guess what? Their stuff went down for like 48 hours the first week I moved into the house. And so I had no garage door access to the, you know, wirelessly or remote or anything. And it who cares, right? I can open it with a little push button, but it's part of my automation. Mm-hmm. So things happen in my house when that garage door opens. And if they don't happen, other bad things happen. So I needed it to work, and I needed to work reliably. So then I ended up buying the whole, buying that thing, the GD zero, I forget the brand, of thing. And with, one of the Z-Wave updates, it kept doing weird things. It would go offline. I have to go out there and pull the plug and redo it. So I saw this thing from Connected. It's the black, but it's the white version of the black. It's for the non, encrypted garage door openers like mine. It's the one you can just click the switch and make it work. So I want to install that. I want to get it installed, and it uses a IR sensor or something to see when the doors open, which is not something I've ever experienced before. So I want to see how that works. That's cool. And maybe replace this thing I have now and have it more reliable than what's going on with this one.
Are you going to do a video on that, Chris?
What's that?
You're going to do a video on it?
Oh, you betcha. I don't buy stuff unless I make a video.
That's the point, right?
We go way back to the wife acceptance factor. Why do you have that? Well, I'm going to make a video on it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's a business expense.
It really is.
Business expense. Yeah, that's what when I moved in, I picked these garage doors because they had battery backups, but they're the MyQ ones. But you with a MyQ, you can't use a traditional garage door opener controller, like none of the other ones, like Wise or Yolink, any of those ones. So the only thing the rat goes work on these, and they're amazing. Like, I am like, why? I'm so happy I made the switch. I can even see when the lasers tripped, you know, when the sensor, when you go across that reopens the garage door, you can
that protection.
See,
yeah.
Yeah. You can see when that gets tripped, when the motion sensors get tripped. So you get access to all that cool stuff that I didn't have before. I was like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah. My brother who also uses Home Assistant, he is a MyQ victim. And he got that, and I saw this, the attributes. Oh, look, my sensor, my smart speaker is reminding me to start the oven. I don't know if you can hear that. I hope not. Anyway, he just showed me the number of sensor inputs that thing provides, something you don't even see on the actual MyQ.
No.
And then you can automate all kinds of stuff off of that.
Yeah, no, I've been using them because the button has a motion sensor on it. So I'm using that in conjunction with the Tesla. So when you get into the garage, it starts pulling the Tesla at a faster pace. So when I unplug the Tesla in the morning, it opens the garage door. It's like, it's completely stupid, but very awesome.
That's a good point. And something you're probably going to ask us about, right? Our automations, but.
Well, that was the next question. So yes, yeah. The next question is, what is your all time most favorite automation? It might be the most useless, but it's your most favorite.
I picked the most useful. Unfortunately, it's probably boring. It's setting the system to night mode, the house to night mode. While I'm doing this, I'm using my non-smart oven control to start the oven so that we can. It's not in Home Assistant. I don't think there's a Whirlpool integration. There might be. I don't know. If there is, I need to do it. It goes through and it checks the garage door. It checks the door locks. It checks the lighting. It turns the alarm on. It turns off all of the fans. And by the way, when we didn't talk about this, but one of the things that I swore I would do if I ever moved into a new house and had the option, I wanted Wi-Fi or Zigbee or Z-Wave fan controllers for my ceiling fans.
Yes.
Because one thing that I just cannot stand is leaving my house and having all the fans run. Because it's pointless.
Yeah.
So I want to be able to turn them off. So I do. And so this turns all the fans off, except the rooms we're actually occupying, like the bedrooms, and a whole bunch of other things. It just goes through and does. And I use it every single time, every evening, right? Every night. And so it's super important automation more than anything.
I like it. Very good. Ryan, is yours useful or useless?
Well, I've got a couple of them, but I do have I have the night mode, which is super awesome. On top of that, it's great because it shuts down the basement, which we've recently redone, turns off all the TVs down there the kids leave on, the lights the kids leave on, and you know, does all the same exact same stuff. That's super helpful, and it's it's very useful to have that automatically come on. The only problem would be is when the alarm doesn't get turned off in the morning and we leave and the sets the alarm off. So, but I, for my, my favorite automations, like the starting, like the most simple is motion controlled lights. Like that just makes you feel like you're living in the future. You walk into the bathroom, lights come on, you walk in the bathroom at night, lights come on at a very dim level. I mean, it's just like that right outside my door here is a, it's a light that gets usually get left on all the time. And you walk past it, it gets triggered by a keypad. The lights come on. It just makes you feel like you're living in the future. It's so simple, but it's awesome. The medium geekiness one's my shades. I have the IKEA shades and it's just cool. You walk downstairs in the morning. If it's bright enough outside, the shades open up, makes you feel like Tony Stark. It's great. And those open and close, I have all throughout the day. They'll change position. You know, it'll close.
Shades wise, it's something I do find. We've not invested in the shades yet. ZemiSmart have asked me to if I'm interested in having a look at some of the shades. So
it's really cool. Yeah. Having the automated shades is really awesome because that's one of the point of few things we use the Googles for. Is my wife will sit in one of the chairs and you'll get blinded. So we'll say, hey, set it 50% and it'll drop down and you'll block your vision. So it's pretty nice to have that capability. And then I did a video on it recently, but like my most ridiculous but pointless one is I have these Gobi lights in here and of course on my house and everything. They're tied into sports scores.
So nice.
During the Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl run this year, we got a lot of use out of those. And you know, every time the Chiefs would score, all the lights in the house would start flickering and flashing and do all kinds of crazy stuff. The outside lights would do the same thing. They would turn on Chiefs colors on game day and stuff like that. So that was like one of those, like I did it because I could, there's no other reason why. And it was cool. People really liked it. It kind of resonated, but at the same time, it's like completely pointless. It actually sucks because if you pause the TV, then the house would tell you, they scored. Oh crap. I guess.
Yeah. I hate spoilers. I'm going to amend my new device, next device. I want shade controllers somehow, but I don't want those big old huge boxes because we've got the kind that you have to spin the little twist, the little deal on them and they make those, but then you've got a big old box hanging off of that thing.
Yeah. I've got the IKEA ones and they are for the price. They're great. If you get ones that aren't broken from the beginning, as long as you like the color they come in and they fit the size, they're great because they're like between 100 and 180 bucks US per shade, which if you look at the shade costs, it's one of the cheaper ones because all together they're battery powered, they're Zigbee, they run on Zigbee 2 MQTT, awesome. So it's definitely one of my favorite purchases.
The ones ZemiSmart have asked me is the roller one of the motors inside the tube. Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's what these are too.
There's no kind of box in the wall, Chris, that's some hideous.
Are these the ones that take like 6 or 8 or 16 deep cell batteries?
Yeah.
The IKEA ones don't. They actually come with a rechargeable battery pack that you just pop out. So it's and honest to God, I charge them every 6 months, like not that often. And
the thing that put me off for the longest time was having a bloody cable running down the wall.
I know. If you're building your house and you can put in low voltage wiring, that's one thing. But like I know most people can't do that.
No.
Is yours are battery powered though, right? From IKEA? Mm-hmm.
Yep. Charger fee. Yeah, they're all battery powered, but they come in one color. They only have certain widths. They're all the same length. You can program the stop point, which is nice. But I've got them I have like 13 or 14 of them. So yeah, I know and those were not given to me. I purchased those all because, but redid our basement. So I've got 4 in the basement. I've got, 8 out here in the living room. Cause we have these really tall, almost floor to ceiling windows in the living room, and having shades always sucked because they would never match and you'd keep them closed. But like the view is great. You want to have the view, but it's annoying when it's bright out. So I invested in those and was like, okay, other than I had about 3 or 4 of them go completely bad on me, they've been just great. It's just silly. I even did like a joking, like a Bond villain thing in the intro for the video I did on it, because it makes you feel like that. Cause you can just stand there on all the shades. Like you'll hear the whole house just feels like Tony Stark. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I hate our shades that we have in this new house. They're the kind you have to pull them down. They don't even have a string on them anymore. I guess it's a safety thing. And you got to pull them down. Then as soon as you lift it up, you take the gravity off. They just, you can't put them flush to the windowsill, because if you try to, if you take the gravity off of them, they just kind of automatically spring themselves back up. So it's just,
that's what we had before too. We had those before, and then they would either randomly unhook and spin, or somebody would let them go, and then you'd have to like wind them back up again to get them to go. Yeah, these were just almost as a drop in replacement for those.
I'm going to be shade shopping. This is the other thing that happens in the Home Assistant world. You see a video, you see something else. I have stuff on my desk over there that because I saw somebody on something.
Yeah. And you're like, I would love to do that, but I need to invest the 8 hours it would take to adapt it for my house. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Right. Gents, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much. I think we've came to a nice conclusion there. Before we wrap up, anything you want to plug? Chris, come to you first. You want to plug your channel? What have you got coming up that people should know about?
Talked about the garage door opener. That's coming up. I hate to give away too much stuff because, one, I don't have... I mean, it happens when it happens. Just kidding. And then we're looking at another presence sensor. I don't do the huge presence sensor who is it that did all those presence sensors? But I'll do one at a time. Is it Mark? What?
Aaron did one.
Yeah, he did a whole wall of presence sensors. I don't know how that guy gets all those things, but a couple of those things, and then some other stuff I got on there. I'm going to talk about HACS, I think. And it's not to copy Bearded Tinker. He's doing like 500 HACS videos. I'm not sure what the big craze is on that. He must own something. He's going to invest in them or something. But I'm doing that actually now. That'll come out probably this weekend. I don't know when this video comes out, but that'll probably come out soon. For just going over what I think I need for HACS to make my stuff run, which actually I found out is quite a bit.
Okay. Ryan, what would you like to plug?
So mostly just the YouTube channel. I've got a few review videos coming out, a couple of camera video, robot vacuum video coming out too. And then I'm going to be doing a couple part series on Tesla integration. There was a big changeover in the Tesla integration for everything. They changed the backend API. And just last weekend, the two major developers worked together and they resolved it now. So you have all the full integration restored for Tesla's backend Home Assistant. So I can literally hit a button in Home Assistant and it'll honk the horn or open the trunk or all that good stuff on the Tesla. But there's so many cool things you can do with it now. So I'm building fun little automations like, auto garage door open and close and stuff like that based on that. So
good. I can't wait for this lawnmower video as well. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah. So that'll be hopefully coming out the end of April. If everything works out there.
Hey, I'll make a video if Tesla wants to give me a car to make a video with.
Trust me. I would have loved to have had an influencer discount. At least they can give me full self-driving for free or something.
Oh, that would be cool. Yeah.
I have the trial. It's really good. It's almost there. It feels like, but it does do some stupid things. So
yeah,
I feel like I pay more attention when it's self-driving than I do otherwise. Plus it yells at you if you pick your phone up. Like I'll literally pick my phone up to like look at a signal message from my wife and it's like, ding, pay attention. Okay, fine. Yeah, phone down.
Too scary for me. Mm-hmm. Too alive for my liking. Okay. Well, if you like this episode or this video, please hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, and all the usual dingings, etc. Gents, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers.